Well, I'm sitting in my kitchen with Faith Jackson, whose grandfather-in-law,
yes,
was the first black postman in Toronto.
Right.
And I just want to say thank you very much for coming.
And you're welcome.
And that you have been living at 213 Brunswick you lived there from 1950 to 1972. Right. Okay. So I just want to say that, but I'm very grateful that you're here.
Thank you.
Now, so we're going to be talking about your experiences in this neighborhood, because 50 to 72, we want to know a lot about that. But also, you have a lot of history that you know, because your husband, who is Ernest Bruce Jackson, who was born in 1926, lived at 234 Brunswick. That was a place that his family had bought. His grandfather had bought.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So maybe we'll just start with a little bit of the history about Albert Jackson. So could you just...
I can tell you what I was told by my late husband's mother, who was Ethel Jackson. The story then was, she told me and my children, that Albert Jackson was the first black postman in the city. He was...
And where was he living at that time?
I believe he was living at that time at 93 or 95. Oh, boy. It's either 93 or 95... Chestnut Street, where the Metropolitan Hotel is now.
Okay, but he bought property in this neighborhood?
Yes, he bought...
Tell me.
213 Brunswick.
Uh-huh.
And he was a postman, I believe, from 1883 to 1918, when he passed away.
And
then after he passed away, his wife, Henrietta Jackson, started buying property in this area of Harbert Village. She bought 234 Brunswick Avenue. She bought 238 Brunswick Avenue. Already in the family was 213. Brunswick.
Uh-huh.
That.
So they already owned 213,
yes.
And then they bought 234 and 238,
yes.
Brunswick.
And then they bought 105 Borden.
Oh. And approximately when would all these have been?
Oh, Grandma Jackson bought after he passed in, I have the papers, I believe, in 1920-something, because my late husband moved into 234 Brunswick when he was just a baby, and he was born in 1926.
Mm-hmm.
So she'd already owned the houses then, and they're side by side attached together, 234 and 238. There's no 236.
Mm-hmm.
And what she'd done when my father-in-law married, she sold him 234 Brunswick for a dollar. And she sold her other son, Harold Jackson, 238 for a dollar.
Very nice.
213, where I lived, was to be her other son, Richard Jackson's home, when he married, but he never married. So it eventually became his home, because he looked after his mother,
mm-hmm,
for many, many years. Yeah, I believe they bought 105 Borden, and I don't know the numbers on Borden Street up near Bloor. There's a parking lot there.
Yes.
and Henrietta Jackson had bought three small cottages that used to be there, and the city expropriated them and put in that parking lot. They weren't fabulous places, you know, they were small and attached together. Now, there is a house that's standing that didn't get bought by the city or expropriated by the city, that's still standing there. My father-in-law bought that house on Borden Street.
So is that south of the parking lot?
Where
is
yes, that it's the house that...
The first house that's south of the parking lot.
That's standing at the parking lot as you're walking down from Bloor to
Harbor. I know that house.
That was my father-in-law's. And my mother-in-law sold that house in 1972. Where else did they own in this area? Well, when they left 93 Chestnut Street, after Albert Jackson passed in 1918, she sold 93 or 95 Chestnut, and she bought a big house at 277 Palmerston Avenue, and it's a 13-room house.
So they really liked to own property.
Oh, she was something else.
Yeah, I bet.
And I really don't know all the houses that Richard Jackson owned. I do know he owned a home, I believe it was called Russet Avenue, wherever that is, up here. And he owned a lot in the Leslie Queen area. And that's about all that I was told that he owned.
Could we come back and talk a little bit? I'm going to want to know your impressions of this area and the changes, but just a little bit more on Albert Jackson, about what the stories that you've heard about his life as the first black postman in Toronto. So what are some of the stories that have come through?
Well, he was an escaped slave. That's his mother, Anne Marie Jackson, brought with her seven kids.
From where?
From Delaware. And escaped here through the Underground Railroad. And I believe he was the youngest of the lot. He was either 2 or 3 years old. And when she come here, she was helped by another former slave who was the fellow that owned the first taxi service in the city. His name was Thornton Blackburn. And I guess as my mother-in-law told me that they went to school. She took in washing, and Anne Maria did, and helped raise those kids. But before she came, the slave owner, and the reason why she came, the slave owner had taken her oldest two sons, John and Richard, and sold them from her. And she asked her husband to come, and he didn't want to come. For some reason, he was a free slave. But because he was a free slave, did not make her a free slave or her children. So she didn't want any more of her children taken from her. So she decided to come through the Underground Railroad. And then I guess they went to school and that. And the two sons that were sold did escape from there through the same channels of the Underground Railroad and met up with the mother here. The one son, Richard, became a barber, and he lived with his sister on Elizabeth Street. Mm-hmm. The other one became a writer, I believe. And at the time when Albert became the postman, the story that we were told was that they didn't want him, the co-workers who were white, did not want him to be over them, like have a better position than them. So they didn't let him go out and deliver the papers, deliver the mail. So the oldest guy, John Jackson, the one that had escaped and met up with his mother, he wrote to an organization, and there was all kinds of turmoil about why he wasn't out. And somehow it was an election year, so I hope I get this right, and Sir John A. Macdonald,
oh my gosh,
interceded.
Wow.
And 2 days after John A. Macdonald interceded, he was allowed to go out. And he was a postman from 1883 till to 1918 when he passed.
Now, and as he delivered the mail, were there stories that you heard about that? Were there issues or difficulties? Or
my mother-in-law didn't say too much about, you know, what happened with him delivering the mail. Only she said something to the effect that some of the people, I don't even know what area he delivered in, but she said some of the people just didn't like the idea of a black person touching their mail. So from that, I don't know. But people often wonder, as my mother-in-law would say, what and how the money that he made, were they ever to buy that property that they bought? Well, Henrietta Jackson, his wife, she was a seamstress. Mm-hmm. And the story my mother-in-law told, what's that? Those boys never really, the three sons, never really had to buy clothes. She sold everything. And they were very thrifty.
I
call it cheap, but my mother-in-law said they were very thrifty. My mother-in-law lived in that house, as I say, from when my husband, my late husband, was a baby until in 1972. We bought a house out in Scarborough, and we took her with us.
Uh-huh.
And I think when I came in the area, there was a lot of Jewish people in the area. And then it seemed that the Portuguese came in, and people started moving out. I had a nice neighbor, lady by the name of a couple by the name of Mr. and Mrs. Feld, and there was, I believe, an alderman in the city called Grossman. He lived across the road, and when I lived there, got to know his mom. His mom and dad were super nice people. I didn't get to know him that well. Wasn't easy living there at 213, even at the time that I was there from 50, early 50s. There was lots of name-calling. These immigrants that came in, especially Portuguese and that, it the kids were called...
What were they called?
They were called nigger. Mm-hmm. And it seemed that we were always arguing and trying to teach these people. It seemed that probably was the first word that their parents taught them when they seen blacks. There was a Ukrainian family lived on the same side of the street as me. I don't know the name of the number of the house, but there was three girls and a boy. And we all became very good friends. And their daughter is still a friend of my family growing up. And she married and separated, and she had two girls. Those two girls are friends of my grandchildren. And, oh yeah, and her children and her are part of my family. She's what I call my adopted daughter, Tina. All these many years.
So that's a Ukrainian family. Became very close
with
them. But your children and you experienced some pretty harsh behavior and language.
Even from school, at school, the kids. My husband told us stories about how there used to be at one time some gang or something at Christie Pitts. There used to be a Christie Pitts gang, and there used to be name calling in that, and that's how he learned to take care of himself.
So he had to learn to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said he had a few Jewish friends that these guys used to like to pick on. And he was their protectors. They were his buddies. And
So he had to really learn to protect himself.
Yeah.
Or else he'd get beaten up or chased or taunted.
Yeah. My son that's alive, he was born in 57, so I think he's in his 50s, 54, 55 this year. He would be chased home one day he was chased home by three kids and crying and that. And I told him, no, you're gonna stop right now. And that kid was in our pathway, and I told him, no, you're gonna go and confront him. I don't want you to fight, because that's not the way to do it. But we got to do something that these guys don't keep beating you up and stuff when you're walking to school. And they started, and then I separated them. And then after that, he didn't seem to have too much trouble. But once you ran from the name calling and stuff, they would just get, every day he would come home crying.
That must have been heartbreaking for you.
Yeah.
As a mother.
So I said, no. Because I went through the same thing growing up in the city. What I lived down at on D'Arcy Street. That's where I grew up from early, I'd say when I was 7 or 8, until I got married. But then you had to deal with it. It's so much different now. It's a lot better. Mm-hmm. Everybody seems to try to get along.
So it was hard for your grandfather-in-law initially, and through the generations, and you said it got better and better, but even you said it was hard for you and then your children too, and they had to learn to take a strong stand in some way or another. Yeah.
But it's so much different now, because from my children, like my son, he's married to a German Yugoslavian girl. Her father's Yugoslavian and her mother's German. So the mixing of the races. Oh, the Jackson family is, right at this point in time, so
intermarried.
I often think about what this Albert Jackson would have thought from where he came to where the Jacksons are today.
So you're saying a lot of them are married to people who are not black?
Yeah. So a lot of intermarriage in the Jackson family. Then in my immediate family, as I said, my son is married to German Yugoslavian. Mm-hmm. And my youngest daughter, who's 51, she's married to a Portuguese.
Yeah, so you have
yes,
a range.
Range.
Also, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And now I have a grandson who's married a girl from El Salvador last year. And I have another grandson that's going with a young lady from Argentina. and another grandson is going with a young lady from Guyana. And my oldest daughter married a Trinidadian. My second daughter married an Antiguan. And my son that passed, he didn't ever marry. He was just by himself. And who else? And then now I have a granddaughter married to a Hawaiian.
You have a little United Nations in your family. Just for the record, when you first came, you told me about your children, grandchildren, etc. Just tell me about that for our tape. All the number of generations that you have.
Oh, yes, I married and had 5.
And you had your first child at what age?
I was not quite 17. Yes. And then my oldest daughter, well, you want to know how we got to all these generations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my oldest daughter had 3 children. She had 2 girls and a boy. My second daughter, she had 3 children. She had 2 girls and a boy. My son, he never married. He didn't have any. And my other son, that's married to the German Yugoslavian, they have 3 sons. And my youngest daughter married to a Portuguese fella. They have 1 son. And then I have a step-granddaughter from my second daughter's marriage. Her husband had a daughter previously. So she's my step-granddaughter, and she has 2 children. So that made me, at that point in time, when they had their children, a grandmother to 11.
Mm-hmm.
And from the being a grandmother of the 11, I am now the great-grandmother of 9. And then 2 weeks ago, I became the great-great-grandmother of a new baby girl whose mother is from Bosnia.
Oh, my God.
And I am 78 years old, and I will be 79 in July.
And I'll add that, as I said to you before the tape was turned on, that you could easily lie by 20 years and nobody would suspect it at all. I can't believe it. You look gorgeous.
Thank you. And my daughter, the oldest one, that will be 62, she's small and she still looks so young. Nobody puts her past 35.
So you look young.
And her oldest daughter is 42, and she looks like 16.
Yeah, yeah.
And my 51-year-old daughter still gets carded at a casino.
Lovely.
And she has 1 daughter.
Oh,
and I don't know if I met.
So all the women are young and beautiful.
Yeah,
young looking and beautiful.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I don't know what it is. My oldest daughter jokingly will say, "Well, it's designer jeans."
Okay.
Very, very close family. My 4 children, my grandchildren, and myself and my great grands. And I travel all over the world with them. They just have to have me there. And they like to go with me to my places where I go every year.
And just briefly, would you just tell me what your work is at 78 going on 79? And then we'll talk about the community.
Okay. I'm with the Workplace Safety and Insurance Appeals Tribunal. And it's an appointment by the government. I have been with them since the tribunal first started in 1985, and at that point in time you were appointed every 3 years. The appointment system has changed now, but it's my chair still wants me, so I am there until 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And if I stay until October 2014, I would be 81 years old.
Yeah,
but I enjoy it.
And some people by 55 can't wait to retire. Yeah. And here you are.
And I, on the appeals tribunal, I'm what you call a worker member. Next to me sits a neutral vice chair and then somebody from the employer community. How I am referred to as a worker member is because I was involved with a union. I used to be a business agent with a union. And when this tribunal started, they wanted a visible minority, a woman, and the Ontario Federation of Labour is the one that put my name into the government. And that's how I got the position.
And they never looked back, and you never looked back.
No,
either.
I never looked back.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a wonderful background to your family, your husband's family, and yourself too. Now, you mentioned that there were problems in all the generations because of being black.
Right.
So that is something that I wanted to talk about, and it was there, as I would have suspected. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. it was there, but you're saying that your perception is that it has genuinely changed.
Yes, it has changed. It has changed a whole lot. I mean, it's just totally different, because this is such a multicultural city.
Yeah.
And everybody is mixed, and I think things have changed.
Definitely for the better.
Yes, and getting back to even my workplace, people from every part of the world there, and we just work together. The collegiality of being there and being friends, it's unbelievable.
So your husband's grandfather did not have that experience.
No, he wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And my mother-in-law, she didn't have that experience either. My mother-in-law was originally from Cincinnati, mm-hmm. a border of Kentucky. And her sister worked in service, because that's the only job you could
service
have.
Service meaning?
In living in a person's house and cleaning and stuff. And the people she worked for in Cincinnati, my mother's sister, brought her to Toronto. They came here to work and to live. And so after my mother-in-law's sister was here for a bit, she sent for my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law was only 13 years old, and she brought her here. But my mother-in-law saw things down there that really were horrible. She saw a young boy that she knew, he was 8 or 9, lynched. And so, like, tarred and feathered, and the Ku Klux Klan in the area where she lived in that. So that's why my mother-in-law's sister wanted to get her up here. And when my mother-in-law came here, she didn't, she didn't have a very good love for white people.
No wonder.
And I think I changed that. Yeah. Because I've always had friends of every... tried to be nice to everybody, and I had lots of friends, and lots of white friends.
Yeah. Well, she had learned to be afraid of them. She had learned that they would hurt her and her family.
But as she got older, when she was in her 70s and 80s, she said to me, it's so different. Yeah, and how you live, how I live and my children lived, and how my children were to respect everybody. That's what I taught them. It was hard for her to see all the intermarriage. But I think I won her over, because she said to me, it's not all that bad. There is some good people. I said, sure, there's good and bad in every race, like there's good and bad in every person. No matter how bad that person is, you must look for the good, because there's got to be some good.
Well, that was a gift that you gave to her to help her move along, and that, because the other was fear and anger.
Yes, that's
so
exactly.
So you really gave her a lovely gift by helping her let go of some of that.
Yeah.
But it's understandable that she had it, considering what she grew up with.
Yeah, but you can't be bitter all your life against a race of people or someone for... You can't blame a whole race for... And I'm sure you understand what I'm trying to say.
But did you realize at the time how much you were helping her and making her life better by helping her let go of some of that?
Yeah.
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 Good for you.
And she wasn't a bad person. She was a good person. She was. She was. I loved her. I loved her like a mother. She was very special to me.
So she must have felt that way about you too.
Yeah.
That all these things.
Yeah.
I talk about the mirror effect.
Yeah.
So if you loved her, it's because she loved you and she was a loving person, I assume. Yeah. Okay, so you talked about what it was like living here, you know, different color, different race, and that it really has improved. What are the languages that you remember in the neighborhood?
Well, Jewish, and then there was Italian, but not... Can't say there was a lot of change in the area to Italian. I remember lots of Portuguese.
Mm-hmm. So the waves of immigration, the Jewish people were here,
and then
Portuguese.
Sort of moved out.
Bathurst. I think that they felt that was improving their lives.
Yeah.
When they had enough money, they moved to bigger places out of this neighborhood.
Yeah. Bathurst and Seals and Shepherd and stuff.
Yeah.
And... But, you know, he never stopped going up there and buying. I used to love, what is it, gefilte fish. And a lot. What was that other? My husband used to love some kind of, it's red, eel or something.
Lox?
Yeah.
Fish? Sliced lox?
Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And
so, you know, now that we're talking about that, I wonder whether... So when you were living on Major, on Brunswick, what was the cross street, the east-west cross street that you were closest to?
Sussex.
Okay.
I lived three houses south of Sussex on the east side of Brunswick.
Got it. Okay.
Three houses down. My mother-in-law and them two houses, 230 and 234, were on the west side of Brunswick, and she was three houses down. So I'm three houses up from Sussex Corner, and she's three houses down.
Right.
So I saw her every day of my married life.
A lot. So what, tell me, I mean, you're talking about gefilte fish and lox, these kinds of things, and that...
Canisius. I still love them.
Me too. Talk to me, please, about the stores in the neighborhood, the stores, the corner stores, the Jewish stores, the Hungarian, all these kinds of things, because we're moving kind of naturally into that topic.
Yeah. There was a store at the corner of Major... The Major in Sussex, on the west side, there was a lady in there by the name of Nellie, who was Jewish. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of money at that time, and my husband was struggling, and I had these kids. He worked for Imperial Oil, 111 St. Clair. He started on Church Street and ended 111. And Nellie would trust you for... whatever you needed till payday if you ran out of money.
So if you wanted
bread,
to buy a loaf of bread, as you say.
Yeah, a loaf of bread.
She would just mark it down on a little piece of paper.
Yeah, some pickles and stuff like that in a barrel she had. Yeah, she was a sweetheart.
But isn't that a lovely feeling that she trusts you?
Oh, yeah.
And that payday.
And he knew her. My husband knew her, knew Nellie from I guess, when he was younger, you know? Mm-hmm. And
so that was a corner store where Nellie knew you, and did she know everybody's name in your family?
Pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she would trust you, so if you...
Yeah.
It could kind of buy on credit.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Forgot about that. And even when I moved, I came back. Nellie was still alive. She was getting old, but somebody else was running it, but she was still living there. Mm-hmm. And I asked to see her and speak to her. Then I had at the corner of Major and Harbert Street, there used to be wasn't a grocery store. Sold cigarettes and pop and stuff. And their names were Eisenberg. And I had a good relationship with them, too. They were really, really nice. Buy stuff and that. And then one time, I went to Acapulco, and I met both him and her there. Can you imagine?
Oh, my God.
And their son had married a Mexican girl.
Talk about all this intermarriage. Yeah. It goes all ways. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Then there used to be the God, let me get the right. The Harvard Bakery.
It's still there. Yeah.
We used to go there to Harvard Bakery. And there used to be on Brunswick Avenue, just before you got to Harvard, there used to be Feld's Drugstore. And was on, you know, the same street as us.
And would they have known your family by face, by name?
Oh, yeah.
Could you do the credit thing there if you needed to?
No, we never did.
You didn't do that, but you had it at Nellie's corner
store.
No,
yeah, never forget
Nellie. Yeah.
Yeah. And who else? What else was around?
In terms of stores.
He used to go on Bloor Street a lot. It was, you know, he...
What was on Bloor at that time?
So hard to...
Anything at all that comes to mind? Theaters, movie theaters?
Yeah, there was a show at just before you got to Bathurst Street on the north side.
So that's now the Bloor Cinema.
Yeah, there used to be a club on the other side of the street, the south. I something to do with Orchid, the Blue Orchid or something, because that's where we had the wedding of my first daughter. What else was up there?
You know, I'm not forgetting that you lived here a long time. You left 40 years ago. You lived here from 50 to 72, so you actually left 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So if your memory isn't crystal clear, it's understandable.
And then I had this lady friend, I think probably everybody knows her, Rosie Schwartz.
I've heard about her. Yeah.
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 I was a good friend of Rosie's.
I think I have to meet Rosie.
And she's a sweetheart.
She lived on Brunswick?
Yeah, and she was still on Brunswick. And I used to come down periodically to see her. I haven't seen her for a while. Hope she's okay. And she had her brother, Max. Knew a couple of her brothers and my son that died, he was a good friend of Max. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And her son, Paul. And I went to Paul's bar mitzvah. I'm not sure whether I went to Paul's wedding or not.
But what you're saying is you had a friendly relationship with Rosie and with other people around the place.
Yeah, and her family, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was another lady up near Bloor called Mary Peters. I was a good friend of hers. And I think Mary was Ukrainian or Polish. I think she's still there, too.
What do you recall about either synagogues, churches, any that you can remember?
Well, there was a synagogue on Brunswick. I don't know if it's still a synagogue.
Well, there is one on Brunswick just north
of Harvard. Yeah.
On the east side.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very lively place right now.
And my neighbor next door, the Felds, I used to turn on the lights or turn off the lights. I used to do all that down on DRC when I was little.
So these people were religious and they wouldn't turn their lights on and off.
Yeah.
And you did it for them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now people can set timers, but at that time the timers didn't exist.
I even have it on my stove, my new stove, for the Sabbath.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. So you did that for one of the Jewish families in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I probably did it for more. I know I did lots more on DRC Street when I lived down there when I was younger.
Yeah. So the Jewish people and the Jewish stores in your neighborhood were quite central in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got along very well.
Yeah, yeah. What did you have behind the house that you lived in? Like, I have a table and some plants and stuff. Did you use it at all, and what was behind it? I assume that there was something behind your house.
There is no lane.
No lane.
There's no lane on that side of Brunswick.
Okay, so what was behind?
We had a backyard.
And did you use it?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. A huge backyard.
Uh-huh.
Little house and a huge backyard. Let's have barbecues.
A little house and a huge backyard.
I used to have the kids out there and play with the kids, and yeah. And it was the neighborhood, like, as they got a little bigger and got to be teenagers and got to go around and meet more people. And so there was this young black guy, every time he saw smoke coming from our yard, I don't care where he was, he was there.
He wanted to sample what you were eating.
Yeah, they're barbecuing again. Yeah, we had lots of fun in that house. It was an old house, but we had fun.
And who lived there? You and your husband and your five children?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's it.
And how many bathrooms did you have? Of course. For the tape, we'll say that you pointed with one finger.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, people with a family of seven would think, we need at least two or three bathrooms.
Oh, yeah, my grandkids and kids all always need something. They have to have...
Yeah, they need it. I love the word need.
Yeah.
I'm saying that.
The same granddaughter I went to New Orleans with this weekend, she's married to a guy from Trinidad who does computers and does programs, I guess, and does very well. And she has this SUV. And she has two small kids, and they're both in their... Well, she's now 38, and her daughter's 5. And her son is 4. So they waited to have kids. So she had the SUV, and when you put the car seats in, and then him and her and my daughter, then there was no room for me, right? So it was just enough room for her to hold them. And so this same granddaughter said to him one day, she says, I don't like this because I can't get Nana in there's no room for Nana in the car. What we really need is a 7-seater. So he said, well, if you need a 7-seater so Nana can have a seat, then you get a 7-seater. So she went and she got her 7-seater. So not too long ago, I was visiting with him and visiting her, and she's now in Mississauga. And he said, Nana, you're not in the car very often that much anymore like you used to be. You can't keep up with them. Like, they always want to go for a drive to Buffalo. They want to go here and there. So I said, no, not as much as I used to be. So he said, well, your seat's in the car. So make yourself available.
So that was, please come and spend more time with us.
Yes, how can you? And we got so many hours in a day.
Yeah, and and everybody wants you.
Yeah, yeah. The second daughter is very needy. She had a heart attack when she was 56. And she's now 61 this year. She's doing not too bad. She had congestive heart failure at 56. And she almost died that night. But she's still hanging.
Pretty big worries, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're saying you used your backyard with barbecuing and feeding people and people
did. Yeah, we had lots of fun.
What about the front of the house? Did you use that much? Sitting outside in front?
Yeah, we had a little porch. I used to sit out there. But we had a lot of grass in that. Uh-huh. And the kids were always doing something out there, too. And there was always gangs of kids at my house.
Inside the house and on the porch.
Yeah, outside, inside. Yeah, yeah. And my husband would come home from work and, oh my God. So where did all... Because it was a house where all of them were welcome.
Yeah, neighbors, and they felt
kids, Yeah, neighbors' kids across the street and everybody. Tina and not so much her sisters and her.
So you had a very welcoming and lively home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the kids used to play records, put the record player out in the back and dance. And, well, it's one place where you knew where they were.
During your years here, or now when you come back, what are some of the changes that you see? Or did you see even in that from 50 to 72?
What are the changes I see? Well, for one thing, Bloor Street is totally different. Harvard's different too. It's just different. It's more, there's more restaurants and bookstores. And the whole neighborhood changed. I can remember just before we left, I think that there was that pottery store at the corner of Brunswick and Harvard.
Yeah, it's there now.
Yeah.
And it's been there a long time. So you left in 72 and it was already here. Okay.
And there used to be, or there's apartments now, a little, not too high, on, is it Borden and...
Harvard.
Yeah. It used to be a laundry. My mother and I used to work in that laundry when she was younger. And that's now like apartments or...
Yeah. It might be some kind of subsidized house.
Yes, it is.
So you said the feeling on Bloor Street was very different at that time.
Yeah, because it's... Oh, and Starkman's... Is Starkman still... Starkman, I don't think, is still there.
No.
Used to be at the corner of Major and Bloor.
So that might be where Kinko's is now.
Yeah.
Starkman, is that a drugstore? Or is that the place that has all the handicapped wheelchairs and
it
all
was,
that kind of
it
stuff.
It was like a drugstore there then.
So I think it's evolved into what it is now on Bathurst.
Down on Bathurst Street.
Right.
It's a totally different neighborhood.
What about, you said you didn't have a back lane right behind you, but there are a lot of back lanes. Did your children ever play in the back lanes, or was that not something in your life because you didn't have one right behind you?
I don't know.
Where did your children go to school? Which school?
My kids went to Huron Street School. My daughters, and when they were little, small, started at Lansdowne. But then when I went to start my son, they said that he had to go to Huron Street School. And so I took my daughters out of Lansdowne and had them all
to the same school.
Yeah. And my husband spent all his public school years in Huron Street School.
Uh-huh.
And my son's sons went to Huron Street School.
Oh, so Huron Street has had several generations of the Jackson family.
Yeah.
let's see, we've talked about the store, the churches. Are you aware of the kind of dating that people did during those years in this neighborhood? You didn't date, you just got married and had kids.
Too busy with the kids. No, I...
No, that's not something that...
No.
Yeah. What about the University of Toronto? Do you have any impressions of its significance to this neighborhood?
I think the students that went to the school, some people rented rooms mm-hmm. to the students, mm-hmm. some people on Sussex Avenue, mm-hmm. and I don't know, and higher up on Brunswick too, mm-hmm. towards Bloor, because my friend Rosie, she mm-hmm. rented to students in her house in her brother's place next door.
I'm gonna have to meet Rosie. She lives on Brunswick. Do you know the number?
No.
Okay, but I'll find her. What about the Kensington Market? Was that something your family used at all?
Oh God, I loved Kensington.
So, and what did you love about it? And
I loved the fresh vegetables. We shopped there a lot.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
So is that
even when I lived on the RC Street.
You went to the market.
Yeah.
So might that be where the family did most of your shopping, or did you go to a supermarket also?
Well, they had the supermarket at Dominion at Robert and St. Right. opened up.
Yeah.
But we did a lot uh-huh. of going down to the market. My husband would go and get the fish and carry home the fruit and vegetables yeah. and yeah. stuff like yeah. that. Then we used to have a guy, I don't know, remember his name. He used to come with a small... Well, see, when I moved down there on Brunswick, when I first was there, we didn't have a refrigerator. We had the iceman mm-hmm. delivering the blocks of ice for the old
icebox.
The icebox, yeah.
So how did he deliver it? What was the means of getting it to you? Was it a truck? Was it a horse?
If I'm not mistaken, I think it was a horse.
Likely.
Yeah. And that was maybe when we first went there in the 50s, like in 50, 51, maybe 52, and then we got a refrigerator. I remember when my mother-in-law got her first fridge.
Was she quite delighted with it?
Yes, she was.
Did she trust it?
Yeah. That was really something.
But they were not self-defrosting fridges.
No.
Nevertheless, they were still a big jump from the ice.
Yeah. But then there used to be a guy came with his little truck, and I used to buy... Some days he would be in our area, and we would buy whatever he had on there.
He would sell stuff. Sell some...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vegetables. I always had good asparagus.
You have a good memory.
Oh, yeah.
Considering you left 40 years ago.
Loved his asparagus.
That's funny.
Too bad I can remember his name. So many people to remember.
How safe did you feel at that time? Aside from, as you say, being black had some problems because people were discriminating.
Yeah.
But in terms of the... general safety of the robberies
safe.
And
no, I'm yeah. safe. I don't think half the time that we ever had our front door locked.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was safe. We used to get a lot of guys when the kids were small. I'd say maybe 5, 6 years old would bring you into the early 60s. A lot of guys would be hungry and looking for food and would knock on the door and ask you, yeah, for food, you know, money for food. Or I fed everybody. I baked every day. You come to my door, you don't tell me you're hungry.
Yeah, because I'll feed you.
I'll feed you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I never, living on Brunswick, I can tell you, I never felt unsafe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Never. Walked Bloor Street.
Yeah. And you didn't lock your door, isn't that interesting?
No, for many years. Well, half the time the kids would lose their keys anyhow.
Yeah.
So, no, we never.
Yeah. Do you remember the end of World War II? Would you have any memory of that happening? And
what year was that? 1940? 45. Mm-hmm. Well, I was born in 33.
Mm-hmm. So you were young.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All I remember back there was living on the RC Street, and once we, I don't know what year it was, in the 40s, I guess, and we had a big snowstorm once. Where the snow was higher than... Isn't that funny?
And
now this year we got it.
Yeah,
know.
Right. Well, we're coming to the end. I'm wondering, when you had agreed to be interviewed by me, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering whether there's anything that you had thought we might talk about that I haven't touched at all that would help me understand your having lived here, your experiences in the neighborhood, changes, anything at all.
Well, I had been in the neighborhood for over 20 some odd years, so when I moved, I really, really missed the area. And I had moved to Scarborough, and the first year or so, I just had to come and walk the streets.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And my husband missed it. A lot of times I would meet him at Imperial Oil and would leave the car there or drive down a bit and then come down and be in the area and walk around. I did. I really missed Brunswick.
What did you miss? Do you know? Could you articulate that?
I missed saying hello to people, talking to people. I missed Rosie and her brother. And then there were some black families that moved in, the Garys. I missed them, and I used to come down and see them. Then this other Polish friend, Mary, I miss her.
So
I used to go to some church with Mary up off of Bloor Street and do arts and crafts and stuff like that, where I learned how to knit and how to crochet in the afternoons when the kids were in school. Because mm-hmm. I would get up early in the morning and cook and bake, and I would be in the area. So I missed it. Yeah. Took me a good couple of years.
But what you missed was, I think, the community, the warmth, the friendliness, the familiarity.
Yeah. At the time that I left, I really did miss it. And then when my mother-in-law passed away, mm-hmm. 234 became my late husband's house, right? So, and his brother. Mm-hmm. So at that time, my son was living in an apartment. So we put my son to live at 234. So I had every reason to be in the area.
Good excuse, eh?
Yes. So his son is 27 or 28 years old now. And then he had the three boys there. And then my brother-in-law wanted to sell the house so he could get his money. I told my husband not to sell it. Just buy him out. Mm-hmm. No, I don't want to be bothered. But that time, my husband, I think, knew that he was, you know, not going to be here that much longer. So he said, no, we'll sell him. Let him have his money and I can do what I want. So he just took his share of the money from the house and took my son mm-hmm. and went and bought my son a house on King Edward Street and Woodbine in the Danforth area. Mm-hmm. That's where the bulk of the money from his share of the house went.
So you were very generous with your children.
Yeah.
Okay, so just in terms of this interview, I just want to say thank you.
And thank
so
you.
Much. Thank you so much. You've just given us a very, very rich history of the Jackson family and your experiences in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I thank you very much for
that. Oh, you're
that.
Very welcome.